Northern Brewer is the proud sponsor of the Brewing Network's Jamil Show. They have the widest selection of domestic and imported malts and grain, hops from all over the world, and a full line of liquid and dry yeast. No matter what style of beer you're brewing, Northern Brewer has the ingredients you need, plus fast shipping and expert staff to help you make the best beer possible. Please visit northernbrewer.com for all things homebrew. All homebrewers have a favorite commercial beer, but not everyone can make it. Welcome to the show that teaches you how, where you can challenge two masters, Jamil Zainashev and Tasty McDole. This is the Jamil Show. Can you brew it? Now here's Jamil.
All right, another lovely episode of Can You Brew It? Me, Jamil Zainashev, and my good, lovely...
Do you think it's a good idea to do more than one of these shows a night?
Partner here.
Is it? I wonder if anybody listening can tell which of this is the third or the first one.
I think there's something in there, and I was just thinking to myself, you know, these shows are freaking work. You know, coming down here and doing these... It may seem like a lot of fun, and we try and make it seem as much so as possible, but it's a lot of goddamn work. You know, doing Sunday session, a lot of work, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm worn out at the end, absolutely. And that's about the equivalent. You do one day of Candy Brew It.
We're doing 4.5 freaking hours of Candy Brew It, and it'll wear you down.
It's good work, though.
Yeah. So it's not as easy. It's not like just grins and... drinking beer.
No, we're, you know, serious about it.
We're seriously drinking beer.
Drinking beer. Notice all that barley wine. I mean, that we had there is gone. And then I didn't drink all that, by the way. Couldn't.
Yeah, that was something. Yeah, we're into our third show, believe it or not, of the evening. And you can listen live at thebrewingnetwork.com. There's a listen live link there, and you can actually ask questions in the chat room. Justin's there, and he'll fire up you. There's a chat now button and all that, and you can participate in the show, ask questions of what we're doing. You can actually see us live on justin.tv/brewingnetwork.
That's right.
And
hear us too, right?
See us.
Audio there too, yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, then we need to be careful.
Pretty good quality.
We're talking in between. during the breaks.
No, the breaks are muted. You're good there.
Okay, there you go. Because God knows what I've said that'll get me arrested or in trouble.
And we start insulting each other then. We don't need people to know that we're not friends.
That's right, you freaking bastard.
One thing to pretend but then get caught, that's even worse.
Yeah.
That's right.
Oh, it's awful. They like you get to see the wrestling, though, so that's good.
That's good, yeah.
Whip out the lube.
The bull rush.
Put on the European Speedos.
That's great.
You know, for all your European listeners, you want to watch live, Justin.tv, The Brewing Network. See us put on the Speedos, grease up, and start to wrestle like Greek men.
That's the good stuff.
There you are. I've offended all the Greek listeners.
I think we did Canada earlier.
Yeah, we haven't offended Greece in a while.
Yeah, so it's...
Right, there you go. Another thing that offends Greece is our sponsor, the Northern Brewer. I'm sure you can get Jake to offend the people in Greece.
Jake can offend anybody with the best of them.
Yeah, I love that guy. He's good stuff. Our sponsor, Northern Brewer, northernbrewer.com, they make it possible for us to do this show. Without them, you don't get no show. So go there, and at the very least, you can take your time to tell them how much you appreciate that they're spending money for us to screw here and drink beer and yak into the microphone.
Yeah.
If you don't like the show, then, well, all the hell with you. But, go there and at the very least, tell them that you appreciate that they support us. And if you get a chance, go ahead and buy something from northernbrewer.com. Don't forgo your local homebrew shop, because that's where homebrewers get started, at the local homebrew shop level. And Northern Brewer appreciates that as well. You know, those guys, you need to support them. But, you know, make sure Northern Brewer feels some extra special love. They got stuff that maybe your local homebrew shop doesn't have. So go ahead and, you know, you can buy your main stuff there. But, you know, you can find something special at northernbrewer.com that yeah. nobody else has, that is at a reasonable price, and shipping is cheap, you know, $7.99.
When your grain bill consists of 179 different grains
right.
for that pale ale you're making, Northern Brewer's your man.
That's true. They've got the 179 different grains.
Yeah. They might also say, hey, what do you think you're doing here?
They might tell you that.
They might give you a tip.
But they'll ship it to you.
Speaking of tips, I was in my local homebrew supply store Saturday. Yeah. I spent like an hour there
and they said, giving get advice. Get the fuck out of here.
No. I was like, I was talking to one guy, and then some other guy comes over and says, hey, I got a question for you too, you know? And pretty good. You know, I was like, so
that's fun.
The local homebrew store
mistook you for somebody who knew something.
Yeah, well, I guess I made up some answers.
Okay.
And, but yeah, Northern Brewer is like that as well. It's a great place to go to get information about brewing too, especially if you're a new brewer.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, that's one of the things. I think, you know, Jake's running for the governing committee.
That's right. He's on the bill there.
Yeah. And he's not running for the governing committee to somehow, like, line the pockets of Northern Breweries.
No,
doing it because he really feels like,
advance
you know,
the hobby.
Maybe I can help, you know, advance the hobby. Yeah, exactly. Make things better for all the people out there that I think those guys truly love. They're sick. They actually love all you guys out there.
Well, we do too. I mean, yeah.
I'm glad he told you that was the reason. He told me it was just to make sure I didn't get a seat on the committee.
Right. Jerk. He told us both at the same time. He was on our show. Yeah.
Well, those are really good people. And speaking of good people, I'm sure we got a challenge for us this week. What do we have? What have the good people have asked for this week?
We've got a challenge from Norway. This week, so forgive me if I've screwed up the name.
We've got listeners all around the freaking world.
That's right.
I've got an email from Antarctica, believe it or not.
And really?
From
I've never gotten
McMurdo Station.
No kidding.
Somebody asked me about yeast and like dry yeast or I don't know something about.
That's great.
It was a little while ago, but
-20 degrees is over there asking.
Hang on, what was that, right. Mares?
Will it work at -20 degrees?
No, I've gotten. You know, questions from every continent on the planet. Easily every continent, and probably not every country, but, you know, there's a lot of freaking countries. But
hope they're doing lagers. I think Mraz is right.
Lager country.
Yeah. That's great. I haven't seen one come through from there. That's awesome.
I've only had one.
I like that.
But I thought it was absolutely cool.
So what's the coldest you can ferment a beer? What's the coldest yeast that works?
You know,
I've seen 46, but
it's lower than that. You know, it's around 43, 44 that they start to crap up, but they'll still, you know, kind of eke along in the 40s. The weird thing is, this is one of the things we're going to be doing on an upcoming Brew Strong show, which is storing your yeast. And one of the problems with yeast is, you know, if you're not storing them at a temperature like -80°C where they, you know, are growing at an extremely slow rate, you have a problem with mutations over time. And so, you know, even down around freezing, you know, those yeast are continuing to, you know, the metabolism is going.
But you can't ferment at that temperature.
No. You could, but it would take like years to ferment something, you know, even a, you know, like a mild. You'd be like, 10 years later, okay, it's fermented.
Still bubbling hourly.
I see
I
a bubble a day.
Curious in that. I was.
It's a good question. All right.
Interesting.
So forgive me if I screw this up, but Ola Skoglia from Norway has written in.
That sounds wrong.
And
that's okay.
It's got to be wrong, right? It's
kind of, how would we be able to pronounce it?
Some white guy in California. You know?
There's letters in there you don't even recognize, right?
I'm from Pacheco, Ola. Forgive me. We say Ola, all right? In Pacheco. Yeah. We're very close
Ola.
To
Ola.
Yeah.
Muchacho.
We're Ola people.
Skogle. Exactly.
Skogle. Ola Skogle.
No, not trying to make fun of your name. But.
Let me try this one. He's a big fan of Nugnia. Do I have that one right?
Nugnia.
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 Damn it. 0 for 2. Nugnia. And he,
I'm a big fan, too.
So we've done one of Nugnia's beers before. He wants to know, Nugnia Porter, can you brew it?
Ooh, yeah. Now, that is, you know, one of the great things about the Nugnia beers, you know, it's funny. They're brewing a really good, like, American example of these beer styles, you know, classic. I think, you know, the Nugnia Porter should be in the BJCP style guide. Really should be. The only thing is, if you're in Norway, you can't get it. You know, everywhere else in the world, you can get it. You can get it in Australia, you can get it in Canada, you can get it in the U.S., you can get it all over the place. And it's really well done. And a beer that's shipped that far away, it really holds up. It's fresh and wonderful 6 months down the line. So if you see a bottle of Nugnia beer, it's got a cool, like an O with a couple of, you know, segments out of it. If you see it at your brew shop, pick up any Nugnia beer and try it. You'll be very pleasantly surprised. And a beer from Norway being such a good, you know, local drinking beer of classic styles. I think everything they brew is, you know, would fit into that that category. So what I did is I got hold of my friend Shittel Jikun in Norway, and again 3 a.m. interview, which, you know, at 3 a.m. I'm just the peak of freshness.
You can tell.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Captain Lawrence was a killer, too, because that's like a 4 a.m. or a 5 a.m.
I thought that's when you just get things started, Jay-Z.
Yeah. Yeah, I could just get started snoring about that time. So, but for you, the listener, I'm willing to do it, especially when it involves such a high-quality brewery and brewer as Shittel. So, I give him a call, and he gave me a great interview. Let's do this. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll hear from Shittel Jikun from the Nugnia Brewery in Grimstad, Norway. Back after this.
Okay, I rolled a 15 and I get a +2 from my yeast starter.
Nope, sorry, you failed your roll. Your beer is infected.
No way!
You had to beat a 24. It's Schizosaccharomyces.
This sucks! I just failed versus oxidation! Our party is fracked! Doug's the only one left and his beer is a Berliner Weiss!
What's this? A tea party?
Hey, this is a brew session, man. Get lost!
Is that an actual beer?
Yeah, I crafted it. I don't really use the dice anymore. I'm a 10th level beer nerd.
Are you a 10th level beer nerd? Does your significant other know the difference between an Irish red ale and a Flanders red ale? Do you burp, strizzle, spalt, and fart Y-East 2308? Then you're in good company at Northern Brewer. Northern Brewer has all your beer nerd needs, ingredients, equipment, and knowledge 24 hours a day at northernbrewer.com. Plus, fast, cheap shipping, only $7.99 for the contiguous USA. And check out Northern Brewer's huge selection of dorky beer kits, including the socially awkward Patter's beer and the sci-fi convention showstopper number 8. Make 10th level at northernbrewer.com.
Do you support the Brewing Network? Do you brew your own? Are you looking for an economical, fun, and legal way to do both? Subscribe to Brew Your Own magazine and do just that. All year long, Brew Your Own will surprise you, entertain you, and educate you with articles on beer and brewing from authors like the Brewing Network's very own Jamel Zalishev and John Palmer. Each issue is a full pint of brewing techniques, homebrew stories, tips and photos, projects to make yourself, and recipes for the avid home brewer. Get your tough questions answered by Mr. Wizard and polish your style accuracy with Jamel. A portion of every subscription goes to the Brewing Network, so subscribe today at byo.com/brewingnetwork or just click the BYO logo on the Brewing Network homepage and support a fantastic hobby and your favorite broadcaster. Brew Your Own, the how-to homebrew beer magazine.
Nico, listen, our lawyers said that we had to do this for 1 hour, and after this, we don't have to talk to each other for 3 more months until the next meeting.
Kids, come on, let's get out of here.
I'm supposed to have more lines. I'm the professional. Hey, it's Sully.
And I'm Nico.
And we opened the 21st Amendment 10 years ago at 563 2nd Street in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park, to make great beer and have a great time doing it.
That's right, because to us, the 21st Amendment is more than just the right to make beer. It's the right to experiment, to be innovative, and just do things differently. And so now, we're putting our craft beer in cans.
That's right, cans.
You can find our world-famous Hell or High Watermelon Wheat Beer at Brew for Your Die IPA in the Northeast, Northwest, parts of the Midwest, and Alaska in cans and on draft. So next time you're at your local neighborhood pub or good beer store, be sure to ask for 21st Amendment in cans.
Because everyone likes it in a can.
Tasty Crack Cans.
Tasty Crack Can.
Williams Brewing is your online resource for prompt delivery of quality home brewing supplies. Since 1979, Williams Brewing has offered the finest equipment and freshest ingredients and the best customer service in the business. Cut hours off your brewing sessions by using one of our 11 varieties of famous Williams malt extract. Our Williams Belgian Pale Extract is mashed with pure Belgian two-row malt and a small percentage of Belgian wheat malt for an authentic Belgian character you just can't get from other extracts. Or check out our unique fermenters, 2.5-gallon kegs, paintball tank-based draft beer equipment, bottling aids, and much more. We even have our own line of precision hydrometers. Go to WilliamsBrewing.com to browse our vast selection. That's WilliamsBrewing.com. Orders placed by 3:30 p.m. Pacific time ship the same day. Brewing is easy. The Williams way.
You're listening to the Brewing Network.
I'm speaking with Kjetil Gjikun at the Nygnerud Brewery in Grimstad, Norway. Kjetil, how are you doing today?
I'm pretty good, thanks. Mm. It's a pleasure to be in your show, Jamil.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today. And I'm really very excited to speak with a brewery in Norway, which is, we've gotten quite a few requests. You've got a very vocal and loyal following there in Norway, and I think you're building quite a following here in the U.S. as well. My understanding is it's quite an uphill battle to start a brewery like yours in Norway and distribute your beers, and you're doing something really unique in Norway. Can you tell me something about that?
Sure, yeah. When we started like 7 years ago, or 6.5, it was really no other craft brewers around, or there were a few, but they didn't really make anything out of the ordinary or interesting. So when we started, we like started in a country with absolutely no beer culture. So when we made like our first IPA and porter and so on, nobody really knew what these beer styles were like. And trying to sell these beers were initially impossible. People just said, no, there's no market for products like this here, you know, just full stop. So that was really hard. It is still hard. But things are changing, and sometimes if I'd like to brag about something, I mean, you know, it's good for self-confidence occasionally, then I usually say that, at least we've done something to change Norwegian beer culture, and I think we were the enzyme or the main factor which started to change Norwegian beer culture. After we started, there has been some other craft brewers starting, and imports of foreign beers have exploded. Like in the period since we started, it's changed from virtually 300 to 300 imported beers available in Norway. So yes, it's been tough, but it's changing, and we're really excited about the future because we think that this is just this initial start of a new trend. But I think I'd like to mention that we're not allowed to give information about our products in Norway. That's against the law. So we had a website, .no web address. Mm-hmm. And we were told that we had to close that because we had information about our beers there, our products, and that was against the law. So if we didn't close that website, we would lose our license to brew. And then what we did, since we were exporting beers, then we got a .com email address or web address. We had our website on a server based in the U.S., and we had our information on our website in a foreign language, which was then for our export markets. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, we were allowed to have a website which Norwegians could read in English, and it was all legal. So we got away with that.
It's funny, the you know, the types of hoops they make you jump through in, you know, there's also very funny laws in the U.S. against various things that I'm sure, you know, a lot of the brewers here that you talk with could probably relate to as well.
Yeah, I'm sure. I've realized, you know, when we started, I felt Norway was the most difficult place to run a business because of all the different legislation. But now I realize that there's lots of stuff in the U.S. as well, and varying from state to state.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, and where can people find your beers? Where are you distributed?
You mean which countries, which markets?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We're in Japan, Australia, we're in two provinces in Canada, we're in the US, and we're in Italy, Spain, Holland, Denmark, the UK, Finland, and Sweden. I guess that's it, yeah.
And you didn't mention the US in there, I think.
Pardon me?
You didn't mention the United States.
I did think I mentioned these things. The U.S. is our greatest export market, absolutely.
Uh-huh. And that's really
when we started. I'd like to add, when we started, we really wanted to be the local brewery in Grimstad, uh-huh. But we totally failed. That never worked out. We really never thought of exporting our beers at all. It just started to happen.
Uh-huh. Well, and now you seem like you're very successful at it, and. And in the U.S., people can find your beer through Shelton Brothers?
Through Shelton Brothers, that's right. In, I think, 38 different states or something. It's quite a number of states we're in.
Right. I'm able to find at my local shop here your Porter, your Pale, your Saison, and your number 100, which is a barley wine.
Mm-hmm.
And I must say they're all excellent beers that I've tried, and
Thank you.
I was very intrigued. You know, I thought initially, I thought, you know, beer coming from Norway, oh, you know, what kind of condition is it going to be in, was my first concern. But you bottle condition your beers, and I think Shelton Brothers must be taking some care in helping getting them over here and to the stores, and they were in surprisingly very good shape.
Thank you, and I think bottle conditioning is really important, that it's essential with regards to getting the required shelf life for for exporting beers, but also working in Norway, where some beers can sit in the shelf in the shop or the government outlet system for alcoholic beverages in virtually years. Mm. So bottle conditioning is really, really important to us. It is.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one of the beers that we've been asked to try and brew by our listeners is your Porter. And can you help us out with that? Can you tell me something about the Porter? Like,
yeah, certainly. Our Porter actually is one of the... Well, I started as a home brewer, and our Porter has roots to my homebrew days. And at that time, I was traveling a lot to the U.S. I'm working as an airline pilot, and I used to fly to the U.S. a lot at that time. So I got lots of inputs from the U.S., and that's where it all started. So I tasted the Porter at Elysian Brewing Company in Seattle, which I thought was really good. And I found the recipe in a homebrew recipe book, which I bought at that time. This must have been year 2000 or 2001. And I thought that was interesting to copy that their Porter. And I brewed it, but I didn't pay attention to original gravity very much, and I had a different supplier of of malts. Mm-hmm. So it ended up totally different. And I thought that was interesting because it was also a very, very good porter, but it was not even close to the, I think it's called Zephyrus Porter at from Elysian Brewing Company. And I brought a bottle back to the Cantwell, the mm-hmm. head brewer, brewmaster, mm-hmm. and he evaluated it, and we both agreed that they were not remotely similar, but that they both were interesting in different ways. And from that point on, I've just continued brewing my porter that way. Mm-hmm. So that's the background of it. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know what...
What's the starting gravity on this?
The starting gravity on our porter is 16.5 Plato. Mm-hmm. And I can give you a general idea of the malt combination.
Okay.
Which is, I have the brew sheet in front of me right here. Mm-hmm. 81% Mary's Otter pale ale. Pale ale malt, mm-hmm. and 8% crystal malts, 5% Munich malts, 3% chocolate malts, and 3% black malts.
What color crystal malt is that?
Ooh, that's a great question. I need to move over to find one of those reports from our maltster. Just a second. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's our crystal is at 120 EBC.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And would you happen to know what color on the Munich and the chocolate?
The chocolate is at 940. The Munich I don't have available here with me right now.
And that black malt.
But I think the key to most of our beers, I mean the signature flavor in most of our beers is probably the fact that we use Mary's Otter from Thomas Fawcett mm-hmm. maltster in the UK. Mm-hmm. It's all floor malted. It's of all the Mary's Otter pale ale malts I've tried, this is the richest, the richest of all malts I've worked with.
I would agree with you there. That is a fantastic malt for just about any beer, and especially that rich, biscuity, British type of background character that it gives to a beer. And really is fantastic.
And I guess our signature flavor, if there's anything like that, is based on that we use that malt, I mean the Mary's Otter from Thomas Fawcett, together with very often American hops. Mm-hmm. And I think that's fairly... It's not that many brewers who uses that combination. Mm-hmm.
And what are the hops that you're using in this?
The hops is Centennial for bittering. Should be 29 or 30 IBUs in it. And then there's another brewer 15 minutes before the end of boil. And that's a strange thing. I remember I asked Dick Cantwell about it. That's at that time when I was homebrewing back in 2001 or something, and he said that it was just something he tried out once because he thought it had such brilliant aromas when he was smelling it when using it, and from there on he stuck using he stayed on using another brewer for flavor hops in his porter. Mm-hmm. And since I initially started copying him, then I've just continued doing that.
Mm-hmm. And what's the size of that edition?
Oh, in in a 45 hectoliter batch, which is, or this is the one I'm looking at, is 46 hectoliters. That's pretty close to 40 barrels. Then it's 7,500 grams. I'm sorry that I cannot.
No, no, that's perfect.
Change this to American.
No.
Measurements like ounces.
No, I actually prefer working in grams because it gives you a lot more precision when you're working with smaller homebrew amounts of hops. It's much easier to work with than ounces and pounds.
Yeah.
So,
and another thing which I think is a great way to work is to work in percent of, you know, the malt composition, work in percent instead of weight. Then it's so much easier to scale up and down, and you can look at a homebrew batch with the same eyes as if you look at a big scale batch.
Absolutely. And what's the finishing gravity you shoot for on this beer?
Finishing gravity should be about 3.5, shouldn't it? Let's have a look here. I'm going through some blue logs. It should be about 3.5 finishing.
And what's the total IBUs on this? You were 2930 on the Centennial.
We have this habit of not really counting the other hop additions into the bittering or into the calculation. So our habit here is just to count the first addition of hops, like the bittering hop, when we do the IBU calculations. And that's probably not very scientific or very accurate, but occasionally we've submitted some beers for to large breweries, and you know, they've tested them as a favor just for fun, and they've come out fairly close to the IBUs they should be at.
Right.
So it's just and so maybe we have an erroneous way of calculating this in the you know, calculating the bittering hop, and it's all corrected while we add some more hops for the finishing hop. But that's just the way we've always done it.
Well, and as long as it works,
I need to add. You know, I'm not really a trained brewer. I'm an airline pilot, and I'm just a home brewer who started this brewery. And we have some habits or ways to do things which are not scientifically correct, but. Well, so that's where we are.
Well, the results certainly speak for themselves when you taste the beer, so I don't think you have anything to worry about on that respect.
Okay, thanks.
Ed, do you have a calculated color on this?
No, we don't. And the reason is that I'm terrible with maths, and I've never been able to work with these, software like ProMash and so on. So no, I don't have that. But we've started to have a quality control system with a lab the last few months. So now we're building up now we're measuring the color in every beer, and after some time, then we will know what it is based on how we analyze every batch coming out, and we see the pattern, or we see the consistency, hopefully consistency in the color. So I don't have a calculated color, and give us a few months, maybe 6 or 8 months, and we can tell you what the color is based on what our quality control person does in the lab.
Okay. that's perfect. And what sort of boil time are you doing in this?
We do 90-minute boil time.
90-minute, okay. And do you do that first hop addition at 90 or at 60 or...?
At 90,
okay.
Yep.
And how are you? Are you doing a single infusion mash? And
we've been varying that a little bit. When we started in our first brewery, we had a homemade brew house, and we only had a single infusion mash. We couldn't increase the temperature in the mashing vessel. Now we, for a while here in the brewery we've operated now for the last 3.5 years, we started with a protein rest at 50 degrees C, and we realized that we didn't really, there were no benefit from that. Mm-hmm. So now we go straight into the saccharification temperature, and for this beer that's 45 minutes, and then we increase that to a higher temperature just to make sure that we make all the enzymes work for us to get out some mm-hmm. to get out all the sugars, and then we mash out and transfer it to the ladder tun.
What temperature do you do your sac rest at?
65 C.
Okay.
And that's at 45 minutes. Then we take it up to 72 C for 15 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And then up to 78 for mash out.
And do you do any adjustments to your water, or what kind of water are you working with?
Yes, we do. initially, we didn't do that, and everything worked out well until the water treatment plant installed some new filters. Mm. And all of a sudden, our final gravity increased, and the beer didn't attenuate the way it should. Mm-hmm. And we thought it was something wrong with our yeast, and then we thought we didn't add enough oxygen and so on, and then we realized that they actually took out all the minerals that were in it. So now we're adding calcium chloride
mm-hmm.
up to about 150 to 180 ppm for this beer.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and. How about the yeast strain that you use and the fermentation temperature?
We use White Labs WLP 007. I think it's called Dry English. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Right.
Uh-huh. Well, it's a 007 anyway.
Yeah, the Dry English.
And we're very happy with it. It attenuates well, and also it flocculates well, uh-huh. which is important to us because we don't have any filter.
Mm-hmm.
We don't own a filter, so it's nice that our everyday yeast, our main yeast, has good flocculation characteristics.
Mm-hmm. It drops like a brick.
Drops out very well.
Yes,
absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with it, well, that's to our experiences anyway, is that it's not very good for bottle conditioning because it drops out too quickly in the bottle.
Mm-hmm.
It just drops out before it starts fermenting.
Mm-hmm.
So for bottle conditioning, we use a different yeast.
A lager yeast, or?
No, it's an ale yeast as well. It's a dry yeast. Mm-hmm. It's called Nottingham from Danstar.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Uh-huh. I've got some in my fridge right now.
Okay, yeah. And it makes life very easy for us because it's we propagate fresh Nottingham dried yeast for every batch we bottle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, just taking package out of the cold room and
right.
and propagating it every time. It's
very consistent.
It's very easy. Mm-hmm. Yes, and also very consistent. Mm-hmm. And now with our lab coming into operation, then we do yeast counts before every bottling, and it's nice to not just having a good result, but also understanding why you have a good result and why you have consistency in what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. And what temperature do you ferment this at?
At 20 C, 20 mm-hmm. degrees centigrade.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any other tips for us when we try to meet this challenge?
I don't really think so. I think it's fairly straightforward. But again, what is really essential here is the Mary's Otter, which is rich and malty, and you know that's important.
Mm-hmm. Great, yeah, that's absolutely one of my favorite things. I've always been a big fan of Mary's Otter base malts, and I've used it extensively as well.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
maybe that's one of the reasons I really liked your beers when I tried them.
Thank you. Thanks. Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you very much for your help. And I think we're going to have a real interesting challenge and a lot of great beer to drink if we come close to what you've provided. So thank you for joining us today.
Hey, what are you doing, man? writing a review of WLP 400.
What? You're reviewing yeast?
Yeah. White Labs has home brewer reviews of all their strains. Are you new to these interwebs? Check it out.
That's awesome.
White Labs, your source for great yeast, invites all brewers to visit whitelabs.com to read and write your own reviews of all their yeast strains. Get real-world tips and tricks from other brewers who have made the most of their vials and post your own experiences. It's another way White Labs brings you closer to the best yeast on the planet.
And send. There you go. You misspelled flocculate, dude.
What?
White Labs. It's all in the vial.
Downtown Joe's, located in the historic Oberon Building in beautiful downtown Napa, California, offers an award-winning brew pub experience from 8:30 a.m. to 1 a.m. every day. For 15 years at the corner of 2nd and Main, Downtown Joe's has been voted best night spot 7 times and best brew pub for the last 4 years in a row. Brewmaster Colin Kaminsky's handcrafted ales, like his Tail Wagon Amber Ale and Double Secret Probation IPA, are the perfect accent to riverside dining, live music, and a relaxing outdoor patio. Don't miss the Beer of the Month, special rotating taps, and the BN Army Member Special. Wear your BN gear, get 10% off your beer. Visit downtownjoes.com to make reservations, peruse their extensive calendar of events, or just read more about their fantastic beers. Come enjoy the fine beer, food, and music. Downtown Joe's, the award-winning brew pub where you'll feel at home.
Hi, this is Push from the Brewing Network, and I want to tell you about the Brewmaster's Warehouse and how you can get 10% off your next order. I'm a pretty techie guy, but I've never seen an online store like this. It's awesome. Go to brewmasterswarehouse.com and click on Brew Builder. You can whip up a custom recipe so easily even Sven could do it. Seriously, it's slick. You can share your recipe with your own logo and notes to the Brewmaster's database if you want. And the best part, it keeps a running tally of the beer you're building while you're doing it. Then, bam, click Buy Recipe and your cart is filled and ready to go with helpful suggestions in case you forgot something. This thing is amazing. Brewmaster's Warehouse is run the way a home brewer would do it, with great service, fast turnaround, and $6.99 flat rate shipping. Brewmaster's Warehouse and the Brew Builder blew me away. Check it out today at brewmasterswarehouse.com. I'm serious. And don't forget to put BN Army in the discount code box for 10% off your order. Check out brewmasterswarehouse.com. Cheers.
From the stovetop to a camp burner to some kind of brew stand, most homebrewers follow some version of this progression. With each move, a homebrewer will often have to change a lot, if not all, of their equipment. Until now, Blickman Engineering brings you the top-tier brewing stand, the only brewing stand that grows with you. For example, buy a top-tier floor-standing burner now, and it'll bolt right to your top-tier brewing stand when you're ready for all-grain brewing. The top-tier brewing stand is perfect for 5-gallon to 20-gallon batch sizes. Its modular design is adjustable and accommodates everything from small footprint coolers up to 30-gallon pots. How does the top-tier brewing stand do it? At its core is a strong, heat-treated, and anodized aluminum main post. On all four sides are built-in T-slots for the adjustable heavy-gauge stainless steel shelves and beefy burner tiers. The tiers accommodate any manufacturer's pots or coolers up to 21 inches in diameter. Best of all, not only does the top-tier brewing stand grow with your skills and equipment, but it easily knocks down for long-term storage or transport, too. The top-tier brewing stand from Blickman Engineering. Learn more at BlickmanEngineering.com and to find a local Blickman retailer. And start brewing from the top tier.
Live. Beer Radio. The Brewing Network.
The Brewcasters.
If you're just starting, don't be discouraged by all this stuff. Exactly. It's so easy.
Just throw it together.
Dude. Put some sugar and some water and some yeast in there.
Yeah.
The Brewing Network.
Now back to the challenge. Can you brew it?
Woohoo! All right.
We could drink it. But can we brew it?
Yeah.
We can always drink it. All right, come on. All right, so, Chad, your take on the Nugnia Porter and the Tasty's attempt at a clone?
Very close. I would definitely say cloned.
Cloned? Yeah.
Definitely.
You say close. What's the hesitation there?
You know, I don't know. It just always seems like the homebrew version's a little fresher. Maybe not in all cases, but just a little more fresh character to it.
And, sure.
I think the roasted malt or the black malt really comes through a little stronger in this version as well.
Well, and something that's shipped from Norway around the world, set in my fridge for 6 months.
Mine's 9 days old.
Yeah.
That's it. It's my only beef.
Sure.
Which is amazing in itself.
Had flame
by the way.
Under it nine days ago.
Yeah. Okay.
Cloned.
Right. Mr. Moraz.
I would agree with Chad. It's cloned. They're extremely close. There's just a little hint different in the aroma, which I'm kind of surprised in, that I wouldn't think that it would show up as much as it did.
Mm-hmm.
Tasties is less aromatic than the commercial example, but I don't know I don't know if it's like a coffee smell that I'm getting out of it.
You know, having hung around Tasty for quite a while, I would imagine he's more aromatic, and it's not a coffee smell, but like a gaseous methane smell. that's my take on
that. Probably right about that.
Yeah, they're both good examples, and he's hit it out of the park again.
Huh? And Justin?
I'm starting to think I'm Tasty biased.
Yes, you are.
Because I haven't called him not cloned in a long time now.
Totally against me. Totally against Mr. Moraz.
And Moraz, yeah. I think Moraz is more the... He gets more
he's
of my...
He's your tough calls. He's your whipping boy.
Yeah, it's real cloned.
Tasty or...
I did notice an
California
aroma difference also.
But it's almost not even like you can put a finger on it. Do you know exactly what
I couldn't. In fact, my exact statement to Jamil was, well, there's something... But I don't know what it is. And then we just started talking about age and different things.
Sex and...
Yeah.
California region. Yeah.
It's real cloned. It's... that's a cloned beer.
Won't Shettle appreciate the quality of the programming that is his beer is inspired here.
Well, I want to have more conversation about it. We always do this, too. In fact, Chad made the comment that he started... Just looking for things. You really, when they're that close, you just start to look for things that are
wrong, right?
Uh-huh, and so you amplify even the tiniest differences because we want to have a conversation about this beer. So when they're all that close is when we tend to say, yeah, sorry.
Another excellent point. That, I think that's what happened on the extra gold. You know, we're like, well, all right, so this, you know, level of, you know, this and that, and we're like, you know, hunting and pecking at just trying to have something to say rather than going, oh, yeah, it's the same.
It's the same, yeah.
You know, you start to look for the subtle differences,
and
then people are like, well, no, that's not the same. Why are you calling that cloned? It's like, well...
No, now we're just being nitpicky.
Yeah, we're being nitpicky, and if you handed me a pint of one, you hand me a pint of the other, I'd be like, oh, okay, you know, why don't you hand me two of the same beer?
Yeah.
You know, type of thing. So, you know, there's differences, but again... you know,
we always go back
to
our
refined palates here.
Well, we go back to those same two standards, right? Would we change your recipe?
No.
And if you handed me the beer, would I tell you it's not that beer?
All right.
It passes both of those tests for me. Yeah. So cloned.
Yeah. I got the same thing. I'm like, well, maybe there's some differences, but you know, one was shipped, you know, from Norway 6 months ago and sat in my fridge for a long time. One was 9 days old. So, they're cloned. I would not change the recipe. So, I'm done. Tasty. What do you think? Think he's cloned or not?
Well, you know, certainly I know I can tell that the Nugget beer has some miles on it, but it's actually all that considered. It's traveled really well. I think it's still a very very tasty beer.
It's a great beer.
Go buy yourself. Congratulations to them that is getting here in this good a shape. I mean, this is a beer that when I buy it at my bottle shop, and I can because of the Shelton brothers, I'm not going to be disappointed. I'm not going to say I didn't get my money's worth. It's a good robust porter. You know, it's just he gave us the recipe that fell right into my sweet spot here. 1068 starting gravity, 42 IBUs. You know, Centennial Northern Brewer. Well, you know, those are just things I do all the time. This is the beer. I'm sure if given the right recipe, I'm sure, and I'm pretty sure I can make it. And it looks like I did. It's a pretty much the same beer, you know, with some consideration for distance travel.
All right. Well, let's take a look at the recipe that Shuttle gave us. All right. All grain, metric, 5.74 kilograms of a British two-row pale ale malt, 81%. 570 grams of a Crystal 60. Now, interesting thing, Mike and I were talking. He's like, hey, you know, during the interview, he was like, giving, you know, whatever color, you know, did you get that right in the recipe? And, you know, the thing to be careful of in these recipes, if somebody's talking EBC, European Brewing Convention, colors, it's
different.
He was
saying like 120 there or something.
Right. He was saying like 120. It's about, you know, half. It doesn't quite equate like that, but it's about half. Hmm. And that's the color Lovibond. So if you're dealing. So you need to be very careful. You know, a lot of that information out there, you know, they're talking, you know, throwing out numbers, but you need to be careful what measurement you're using. You know, if somebody was giving you Fahrenheit, you wouldn't assume it's Celsius and, you know, vice versa. You know, the same sort of thing. 350 grams or 5% of a Munich malt, around 8 Lovibond, and a 3% or 210 grams of a black patent malt, around 525 color. And same amount of a chocolate malt, around 350 Lovibond as well. Hops, you're going with 20 grams of Centennial, 10.5% alpha acid, 90 minutes, and 38 grams of Northern Brewer, 9% alpha acid at 15 minutes. Mash is going to be 149 degrees Fahrenheit for 45, and then you jack it up to 162 Fahrenheit for 15. And you're going to ferment this with the WLP007 dry English ale yeast, which is essentially the same yeast you'd use for stone beers. Now, you ferment this around 68 degrees Fahrenheit. Your finishing gravity is going to be 3.5 Plato or 14, 1014 original gravity or finishing gravity. Specific gravity, and about 150 to 180 ppm of calcium chloride. All right, if you are an extract brewer, you're going to go ahead and replace that base English British pale ale malt with 4.13 kilograms of an English pale ale malt extract, liquid malt extract. And that's you know, about 75.4%, and that should get you real close to that batch there. So I've given percentages and I've given metric, and you imperial folks that insist on sticking with pounds and ounces, you can pound your ounces all you want,
covering all the bases.
Yes,
someone will still complain, JC.
Exactly,
it was a good effort.
I've been drinking. We're like 4 hours into the show.
Yeah, someone will.
You know
still.
How I get. I'm a son of a bitch. You go ahead and complain to me when you see me. All right.
Yeah.
Go ahead and whine and complain. I, you know, as long as I'm drinking, I'm fine with that.
I need to keep Jay-Z mic'd up all the time for that.
That's right. I'll tell you what we're gonna do. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, I want to hear from Tasty about how he brewed this bad boy and made it a clone. Back after this.
Hi. I have a sixer of Lagunitas in the icebox. My roommate's gone for the weekend, and I'm wearing something flimsy.
Listen, baby, I told her not to call me after 8. I'll talk to you tomorrow. I gotta go.
Who is that? Your girlfriend? You loser.
Set up, Doug. Did you guys get the cauldron set up on the altar of my yard?
Sir, if you weren't so busy getting booty called, you know that.
The hurricane furnace is using propane while you guys talk. All right, I'm using the scroll of Mosher to boil the first decoction. Nope, it's scorched. What do? Frack, scoop it out and try again. Doug, use your math rake. You took too long. The color is now darkened past the point where you can still call it a pilsner.
This sucks.
I hate it when Greg's the brewmaster.
What's this, Poindexter Urkel?
Dude, can't you see we're in the middle of a brew session? Is that an actual beer?
Yeah, I crafted it. I don't really use the dice anymore. I'm a 10th level beer nerd.
Are you a 10th level beer nerd? Do you belch White Labs 833 and crap Simcoe? Then you're in good company at Northern Brewer. Northern Brewer has all your beer nerd needs. Ingredients, equipment, and knowledge 24 hours a day at northernbrewer.com. Plus, fast, cheap shipping. Only $7.99 for the contiguous USA. And check out Northern Brewer's huge selection of dorky beer kits, including the Cylon Detecting 3-Hearted Ale and the collector's item Super Alt.
Mine's in mint condition because it's still in the box.
Make 10th level at northernbrewer.com.
Calling all homebrewers. Entries for the Samuel Adams Longshot American Homebrew Contest are due May 17th through May 28th. There's still time to get your beers entered. This year, the Homebrew Contest is all about Category 23, specialty beers. So start being creative and brew up a beer that doesn't fit into any of the traditional BJCP style categories. Let your creative juices flow and enter your Category 23 homebrew. Here's your chance to have your beer brewed, packaged, and nationally distributed in the 2011 Longshot Package. And four finalists will be awarded a trip to the 2010 Great American Beer Festival in Denver, Colorado, where Samuel Adams will announce the winners. Visit SamuelAdams.com for all the details. Get your bottles in by May 28th, and as always, the entry fee is free. The Samuel Adams Longshot American Homebrew Contest. This year's Longshot could be all yours.
Hey, Push, the new brewery's looking good.
Thanks, Finn. Piece by piece.
Well, let's fire her up. Whoa! Is that a new kettle?
Yeah, just got it brand new, but paid half price.
What? And that blade scale?
40% off.
The new tap handle?
$5 instead of 13. Got a new regulator for the brew stand, too, but $5 instead of 25.
Dude, where are you stealing all this stuff from?
Where else? The More Beer deal of the day.
Announcing the Beer, Beer, and More Beer deal of the day. Every day, a new fantastic deal from big items to small that will blow you away. Boil kettles, carboy carriers, sterile siphon starters, digital timers. Watch morebeer.com every day for a new deal, and you just might find the item you've been waiting for at a price you cannot believe. Hurry, because stock is limited on most items.
And that sweet Guinness cap, let me guess.
The More Beer deal of the day.
Yeah, I knew it. Come on, let's brew something.
Find the More Beer deal of the day at morebeer.com. Celebrity voices impersonated.
Hilo, what's your fuel like?
Take awesome and multiply it by two.
Yeah!
Spraying live beer radio all over your face.
Can't get any better than this, baby.
It's the Brewing Network.
And now, suck it, Tasty.
All right, we're back. We're talking Nugnia Porter. So Tasty, how'd you brew this bad boy?
Well,
what's the secret?
No secret. Pretty
Follow
uneventful brewing. I did an ample starter several days ahead of time.
That's one of your secrets is, you know, making sure you have...
Well, that's no secret, but that is a very important thing to do.
An appropriate amount
appropriate
of healthy yeast
right,
and
right.
active yeast.
Right.
You know, if you're not growing that yeast and it's going and it's ready to ferment, you're not brewing.
Yeah, you want it to be active. Even if you have made the starter well ahead of time and you've chilled it and you're able to pour off the, let's just say, spent beer, whatever it is, I'd still always... boil up just a little bit more wort the day of brewing, and I'll add that to that while during my 5-hour brew day, those yeast haven't had a chance to like notice that there's a job to be done and get them going. So, yeah, an active starter. So I did that kind of thing. This WLP 007 yeast, frankly, because of this show, I've broken out of my WLP 001 rut and...
It's one of the things I love about this show.
This is freaking amazing.
The show makes us do things we wouldn't normally do.
Yeah, we talked about that. Stones, I've been doing stones with the 072, and that stuff's just amazing.
Amazing, and
it's cool.
It leaves a nice, reasonable fermentation temperatures, it leaves a nice finish on the beer. I really like it. All right, so it's a 1068 beer, and it 42 IBUs. It's got standard, 90 minute boil. That's right, my area.
Your Bailiwick.
Yep. Like, that's my sweet spot. I can hit home runs there. Multiple step mash, that's no problem. I do that all the time. Went out at 149. They call it intermediate rest, but really it's just the primary rest. And then it was a 162 was the stop, and then mashed out at 172. A little bit higher than I normally do, but I did it. And pretty straightforward. One thing I did here is I only made a 6-gallon batch. Often in most beers I make 12 gallons. It just fits better with my equipment. But with some adjustment to the boiling level, not... Because what I have, I'm using a 25-gallon, even for my 12-gallon batches, my 25-gallon boil kettle, it's pretty big. I mean, I only get that thing, but I do a full, you know, full volume
boil. Like an inch of wort there?
And a 6-gallon, it looked like it might have been something like that. So I have to watch my the boil intensity pretty closely. And because it's something I don't do too often, I'm also monitoring the gravity of the beer to make sure it's progressing the way I think it is. So that when I'm done, at 90 minutes, I've got the starting gravity I'm looking for and the volume I'm looking for. So that worked out fine. I was monitoring correctly and keeping the boil looking the same at the surface, even though it takes a lot fewer BTUs to get 6 gallons to a rolling boil than it does.
Yeah, you don't want to leaping out of the pot.
No, and I would in that pot. Much heat. So
you want the same evaporation level. And I think one of the things that you point out that is so important is, you know, you should know what your starting gravity is, you should know what your anticipated finishing gravity is, and your hop additions and all that, and your volume, all that is very important to ending up with the same beer that you're targeting. So
if
you're targeting brewing 6 gallons of finished wort at the end of the boil, and you end up with 5 gallons, and you've hopped for 6 gallons, you've got
20% too much hops.
20% too much bittering going on.
Exactly.
You know, you got to tell me, you know, 20% out of even a 35 or 40 IBU beer is significant, and it's going to alter the flavor.
Right.
So one of the things Tasty really points out often is, measure your, get yourself a refractometer if you can.
Right.
And, measure your starting gravity, measure your gravity through various points. I like to do every 30 minutes throughout the boil, especially, if you have a 60-minute or 90-minute boil, or you could do 20, I guess.
Or you have some reason to think it's not going to be as normal, like it's windy or it's cold outside.
Just check it. Do it every time, and you'll start to get a feel for what it looks like at the surface, what you're evaporating, and, the beer you're ending up with.
Exactly. So anyway, things went pretty normal. This beer is, hopped with hops that I have in my inventory. I didn't have to deal with that at all. Centennial and Northern Brew, I use those all the time. Pretty uneventful brew. Nothing noteworthy too much at all, other than the fact that I just did a 6-gallon batch, and normally I'm doing 12s.
It's because you hate this beer. Is that why?
Well, I'm brewing for competition, and at some point I'm going to be cramp for cold storage.
That's kind of enter this in competition.
I think this will be in the robust porter category.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing, one of the things we had during the discussion was, it's a classic example of a robust porter, but it's different than some examples. I think it's on the opposite end of the style of something like a Deschutes, where it's got a sweeter, maltier kind of character. This is a drier, more roasty, drier finish, hoppier type of version of the style. I think the thing about the BJCP styles is it doesn't matter where you fall in the style. Is it a well brewed beer? Is it within the style? It doesn't matter. You don't need to be in the center of the style. It's so this is just as valid as the other.
Right.
And there are people who love this versus, the Deschutes version, and, there are people who love the Deschutes version.
I just hope I'm judged early. I register it real early and get a low number. That works in some competitions.
Doesn't matter. We randomize in this region, don't we?
We?
Yes.
Oh.
Isn't that the thing that we
When I was doing it, we did.
Yes.
But I'm not doing it.
We forced the randomization, so nobody
we can hammer
have
our replacement over with that,
Well, he's going to have to just...
But the database doesn't come with that in it, does it? As delivered
make sure everybody has a database that has that in it.
Okay, well, get with it. Okay. All right, well,
yeah. Everybody needs to randomize. We want it as fair as possible.
I like that better, too.
Yes. Fairness is the way it should go.
Perfect.
All right.
Anyway, yeah, uneventful brew. Worked out great. Yeah, I went out at 1068 starting gravity, just like the recipe called for.
Mm-hmm.
4 days, all bubbling stopped. Surface was completely clear.
Mm-hmm. So once that happens, what do you do? Once fermentation looks like it's stopped, you go ahead and chill it and rack it, or what do you do at that point? Once it looks
well, then
like
I spring into action here. This was fermenting at 68, right?
Springs in action.
68.
A couple days later, what happens?
68. Soon on day two, I noticed the fermentation slowing down. Well, I'm saying this is a beer and a yeast that I'm not familiar with. So I go down and take a sample from my hydrometer and see what the gravity is. Right. Now I can compute what percent complete I am, because I have an idea what the finishing gravity is going to be.
Right.
If I'm over 75%, my first thing is I got to start raising this temperature to keep these yeast active for a longer period of time.
Right.
So then
I do that.
If I'm a little late in my process, I'll bump it 2 degrees. Then I'll go from 67 to 69.
Right.
And then, and a day later, I'll even 70.
Mm-hmm.
On day four, when it was completely still, even though I've been raising this, I raised it up to 72 for 3 days.
Right, right. And
what's the problem?
Your purpose
to get this. These yeast to clean up the nasty things that they made while they were consuming all this malt.
Yeah. So what happens is they're processing these sugars, and compounds will leak out of the cell membrane into the wort or into the beer, and those compounds are things like precursors, to diacetyl and acetaldehyde, things like that. And, you don't want that in your finished beer. The interesting thing is yeast can reuse those. So those are intermediary compounds that they use in the process
of producing
ethanol and all that. Yeast can reuse those. If you warm them up and keep them active, they'll go ahead and pull those back in, utilize them. They'll use their enzymes to convert them into energy, to build glycogen reserves, all that things that make the yeast healthy for repitching. And, we'll clean up the beer flavor. So that's what Tasty's doing. He's, you've reached that point. Keep those yeast active. Keep in suspension. They'll finish up. You'll have a better tasting beer without these flaws in it. And, the yeast will be healthier for repitching. And, a couple of days, it looks like there's no activity, but the yeeast are actually doing something, right?
Well, yeah, there's not that much of it. And the byproduct of them eating these things isn't necessarily CO2.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not necessarily going to see foam. You're just, they're just doing their thing without putting out CO2. Mm-hmm. It's not like true respiration that they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So after 3 days at 72, I figured, okay, good chance things are done here. Then I, racked, cold crashed it for 24 hours, filtered it, force carbonated it by the shaking method. I do it about 10 minutes at 40 PSI. Your regulator will vary. I can hear my regulator. It tells me when it's about 14 PSI in
you
the beer.
You feel it.
Just from doing it over and over again.
You grab hold of your regulator.
Well, here's what
you shake.
So I shake it for the 10 minutes, right? And then of course
turgid.
I can't pull the pressure on the keg after that. It'd be foam all over the place.
You'd spew all over the place.
It'd be like a big load. So anyway, so I let that sit for 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Come back out and I can pull the pressure. Okay, now I've got now I can say, let me see what I got here. So I'll take and I'll put about 2-3 PSI in my regulator.
Mm-hmm.
Do a nice still pour. Right. Into a nice clean glass.
You get stuff like some Kleenex and hold it around the end there.
Yeah, right. And I taste it. How is this?
You taste it.
It's pretty scientific.
I've never done that myself, but yeah.
Is it undercarbonated or overcarbonated? Well, usually it's a little under. So now I set the regulator to my overnight pressure, which is going to be 16 PSI, 17, depending on how far I'm away from 14.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next morning I get up, after I have my orange juice, go out there and check it again.
After a night of pressure?
Yeah, a night of pressure, and I check it one more time, and usually I just set it to 14, and next day we're drinking it are today.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
That's my trick.
It's complicated.
Well, Just do the 10 minutes, and then remember that you can pull that pressure after a couple hours.
So 10 minutes, shaken under pressure.
Yeah.
You grab hold, shake it for 10 minutes.
10 minutes, if you're up for it, yeah.
Under pressure.
Yes.
If it hasn't blown at that point.
She gets more. No.
You wait overnight.
Yeah, that's right.
Have your orange juice.
Oh, that's when you have the orange juice. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Have the orange juice.
You got to rehydrate after all this.
You can't drink beer for breakfast without having breakfast.
Anyway. Nice.
Okay. This beer is like 9 days old.
That's great.
Yeah. That's amazing.
I'll tell you another great beer was this Lagunitas Wilco Tango Foxtrot.
Yes.
WTF.
It's not released yet.
Not released yet. This is like,
only because we were up there.
Nice.
That's some seriously nice beer as well.
That is a good beer.
I think we're looking at another Laguganza.
Oh boy.
I think we are.
They make such great beers.
I'm looking around here, looking around the room. I see a Meraz. I see
I'd be all over those.
See a Chad. I see a McDonald. I see us all going like, we should do another Laguganza.
Yeah. Fighting for those, that's for sure.
Let's do another 6-8 Lagunitas beer.
Let's do it all from the brewery. Forget the studio. If we're going to do a Laguganza.
They want us up. How about Beer Circus?
I'm going to go do it up there.
We do their circus.
We could do it during Beer Circus. Yeah.
Oh, boy. All right.
I think set it up.
Brew it at the brewery?
I'm in.
Right. Set it up. Let's do it.
They'd love to have it.
Big time. I mean, it's quality beer, and the show's about quality beer. One of the things that people wonder about is, well, you know, how do you end up doing these beers? Oh, it's like, you know, some advertiser is. Well, I'll tell you one thing. Clearly, from Justin and his pathetic state, we get very little advertising dollars.
Right.
It's not these breweries providing dollars that we decide to do, various Can You Brew It beers. We base it off of either it's somebody that I trust is telling me that it's a great beer, and I'll go ahead and I'll take it on their word, or it's a beer I've tasted. And most of the time, I taste all the beers that we're going to do on the show. And if I don't think it's a great beer, we're not going to do that beer. I'm sorry. It's not a democracy. It's, my stupid mistakes that make up the decision here.
Well, you reserve that right. I think that's fine.
It is the Jim Neal show.
Right. And if it's screwed up, it's my fault. Yeah. It's not everybody else's fault. It's my fault. But we need to make sure that, what we're doing is, good quality stuff. Any beer you hear, any recipe you hear on this show, I guarantee that the beer you'll brew from that recipe, if your process is good, you're going to make an excellent beer. You're going to be happy with that beer. Any beer you hear on the show, you can go out and buy that beer in the store, and if it's been reasonably treated by the seller of the beer, it's going to be a great beer. You're not going to be disappointed. Your money is well spent. So don't hesitate there. So. Sometimes our balance is not 100% even. We try and do beers around the world, and we try and do beers around the United States.
We went to Norway tonight, yes.
Right.
Went out to New York, I think.
Yeah. We're trying to hit all of those, and I'm trying to...
We went to San Diego in one night.
In San Diego, that's a lot of traveling.
I'm trying to set up, Australia and New Zealand. Those guys just aren't answering my emails, part of it. But
they don't have email there yet.
That's true. They've still got colonial prisons.
He's that wind-up phone.
Right.
You have to ring the operator.
But, we want to bring you the best beers possible. So it may not have something to do with style categories or, the most popular brewery or, brewery location. But if we have a great beer that nobody's heard of and we think it is an excellent example of the style, an excellent beer and something you should brew, we're going to bring it to you. And just trust us. If chances are you're going to be very happy. So that's how we do things here. Questions from the chat room.
Couple of questions from our friend Brew Tattoos hanging out in the chat room.
Brew Tattoo.
He actually has this Nugnia Porter in front of him. He's been
nice.
Drinking it along with us. And he says he's detecting a little bit of a smoky flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to know if that's an indicator of age, because it didn't necessarily come up in the recipe.
You know, I don't think so. I think you know, I don't think I think you know, anytime you have highly kiln malts, there are some smoke phenolics. So I think he's right that you know, to I wouldn't be surprised that he's detecting smoke phenolics in any highly kilned malt.
Okay.
I don't think that it's necessarily an age factor, but you know, you will detect that, and it's in with the melange of other characters there. So it's just his perception of smoked character, I think, is refined, and he's, you know, picking that stuff up.
So not necessarily age.
Right.
But just in
the highly kilned malts, and okay, maybe, you know, there may be other things that kind of, you know, accentuate or, you know, suppress that okay, character. But yeah, anytime you're dealing with highly kilned malts, I think you get a smoky phenolic is present in them at a small level. So I think, and some people will be more, you know, highly attuned to those. Mm-hmm. And so maybe Brew Tattoo is, you know, picking those up, and he's always going to pick those up, where other people don't, you know, detect it at all. Yeah, everybody's slightly different.
Okay. All right. And the other question we got tonight is, and this comes up a lot, optimum temperature to raise over your fermentation temperature. So you guys are always talking about doing that kind of rest above fermentation temp. Is there an optimum temp?
It depends on the beer. I've got a Golden Strong that it's been in ferment 6 days, and started at 66, and now I'm moved it up to 70. But before I'm done, it'll be at 82. Obviously, that wouldn't work for according to Beer and Classic Styles, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Yes,
the Bible.
Yeah. Got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
Other beers, I wouldn't do that. Like on, for instance, this beer, I went up to 72. I didn't think it appropriate to try to, you know, to do more than that.
I wouldn't,
especially
either,
with the yeast. I don't think I had that much left in it. But.
Right.
But I forget what yeast we use for the Golden Strong. It's the Antwerp, I think, or something. Anyway, that yeast will produce some interesting flavors. Mm-hmm. Later on, I'm not going to make like 80% of my ferment be at the higher temperature. I mean, mm-hmm, that, mm-hmm, I'll be at 82, and I'll bet there's no more than 5% of the, mm-hmm, fermentation left in that beer, if that.
Mm-hmm. Jan, how about you?
I ramp up. You know, after the first 48 hours, man, I'll just let it go. I mean, to be honest, after the first 48, I don't care.
Once growth is done, you can just start pumping temperature up. Yeah,
that's why I get away with a lot of beers. I mean, you keep it in the conical for 48 hours, transfer to a carboy, it just let it rise, you know, room temp.
Mm-hmm. Right, so he's, I get the specific question is a single optimum temperature, and it sounds like you guys are saying there's no single optimum temp. Just go ahead and let it.
Morass, how about you?
I think it's more to the, like Mike was saying, more to the yeast style.
Uh-huh.
That you can, you know, like a lager, you wouldn't dare think about heating it up that much.
Right.
An ale, you know, maybe we'll say 4. Belgian, depending on what you're making, let it go 10 degrees.
Right.
But, you know, keep it restrained in the beginning. So it's all, I think each style, you need to know how they react to temperature,
because
you don't want to, you want to restrain some of those really hot phenols, and you wouldn't let them go right off the bat. So I think...
Well, yeah, I'm along the same lines. You know, it really depends on what you're doing. So I've been brewing this Rigwelter beer, and you know, the fermentation was, you know, 65 up to 69 is, I think, what the brewer reported. And then you know, it's every 69. I'm like, well, I want to make sure there's no I don't taste any diacetyl in the beer itself, so I make sure there's none in there. So I give it another 3 degrees for a couple of days. Okay, 3 degrees. You know, if I was to raise it 10 or 15 degrees, you know, I'm up into the mid-80s, the yeast is going to break down much faster. You know, one of the things people email me constantly, they go like, you don't do secondary, and, you know, I don't believe you, and, you know, you're going to end up with a bad beer. And it's like, no. I think if you're at, you know, you start with healthy yeast and you're at fermentation temperature, you can sit for a couple of weeks. It's not, you know, but if you bump the temperature up too high, you know, yeast activity, and you end up starting with problems. But there are cases where you do jack the temperature up quite a bit higher if you're dealing with, you know, some of the Saison yeasts, where they really just don't show enough activity unless you get them enough heat, you know, things like that. So, you know, there are times when you do want to, you know, you look at the activity of the beer, the gravity of the beer, and you kind of decide, oh, it's attenuated everything out. You know, I'll give it a couple of degrees just to kind of clean up for a couple of days. Or it's like, well, you know, it's starting to slow down, but it's not attenuated out. I better jack that temperature up. I'm going to give it every last bit I've got in order to kind of heat it up and keep it active mm-hmm. until it can finish out. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a balancing act.
Yeah, you have to drive the train. You know, it's not going to drive itself. Like I sometimes I'll rouse the yeast if I feel like I'm not getting the, mm-hmm. not going to reach the attenuation I'm looking for.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm never afraid to go ahead and kind of swirl the yeast up and maybe get a little bit more out of it.
Okay, great job. That's it from the chat room, guys.
All right, well, that's it.
Whew!
Thank God. It's only four hours and 40 minutes into it, and we're done. Three Canyon Brewed shows. And if you like this programming, make sure you hit up northernbrewer.com, and at the very least, you can send them an email and say, hey, thank you very much. I appreciate it. We still want you to support your local homebrew shops, of course, but, you know, Northern Brewer carries a lot of products you can't find locally, and make sure to, you know, check those out and give them some love, because they are paying for a show that... if they didn't pay for, honestly, either you'd have to pay for or we wouldn't be on the air. Because yeah. Nobody wants, you know, four fat guys sitting around talking in microphones drinking beer. Well, except for us. There's four people who would vote for that. Five. One skinny hippie-looking dude. Looks like Jesus. And if you can, go to the Brewing Network store. Check out all the great products they have there. And until then, brew strong.
And often.